everyone. This is Chef Leisha, and welcome to The Mindful Chef. Today, we are talking about searching for soul food. Not actually searching for soul food. The TV show, Searching for Soul Food on Hulu. And I am excited about this show because of so many reasons, but mainly because of Chef Alisa Reynolds as the host of this show. We are embarking upon a time in media where Black voices are being heard and felt and seen, and I am just really, really grateful for the opportunity to see us reflected, especially in the culinary space. This food media is just, you know, amazing. So let's get into it. Searching for soul food. I keep getting tongue tied. Searching for soul food is a very different type of cooking show, food show, culinary centric show by a Black person, as there are these connections that are being made with other cultures, which is very much a California thing. I don't know if you heard my other podcast recording about High on the Hog season 2, but I touch on how California Black chefs are a little bit different than other chefs, as our worldview and our food story is not so strict in the soul food realm. We often actually get made fun of about our culinary perspectives because of our proximity to certain ingredients and our need to always want to flip the script, right? So we have a ton of fusion restaurants here, a ton of chefs who incorporate Asian, like Vietnamese and Filipino cuisines and Mexican and Salvadorian cuisines into everything we do on a regular basis. And also, let's not forget about the fact that we have access to such beautiful produce all year round because of our climate. And as we are a $1 billion industry in agriculture, we are growing a great deal of the world's food here in the state. So as such, searching for soul food does go into some areas and themes that other cooking shows do not. And I think that is really, really just, you know, so dope because of who Chef Alisa is, but also like so dope because this is the life of California Black chefs. So she goes to Mississippi, Oklahoma, the Appalachia, South Africa, Italy, there was Jamaica, Peru, and LA. And you just get to see some beautiful, beautiful food, but also hear the stories of the people. Some of the stories that really resonated with me were the native peoples that she visited in Oklahoma, and the cuisine of the Appalachia specifically, because you don't get to see those stories told quite often enough. There is a lot of misunderstanding about not just Black food, but also Native food. I think we have been force-fed this imagery of commodities, fried bread, and we are told the stories of the Native people who are living on res that have health disparities and everything. And while there is so much truth to the food insecurity that is happening with our indigenous population, there is still a lot of preservation happening in different indigenous groups of culture, of food, of the connection, of the land. And their story really does involve the land and honoring the land and taking care of the land and eating sustainably what is local, what is fresh, what is, you know, attainable, and turning it into beautiful, beautiful dishes that look very much like African dishes. So the story of those people were just amazing to see the process of cooking outdoors and how there are people who are working very hard to salvage the culture and teach others. So I really enjoyed that. And then the Black folks of the Appalachia, let's get into the fact that I really didn't know it was that many Black people in the Appalachians. And I added an S onto it because that's what we do. But yes, there are Black people in the Appalachians, and really highlighting that their soul food looks similar, but a little bit different. There's a twist on it. There's some things that they eat there that's a little bit different. And it just made me want to go, to be perfectly honest. It made me want to go and understand the rich history there. The Appalachians are known for their food insecurity looking a little bit different than other areas. When we start talking about food apartheid, we often hyper focus on the urban areas. And I think that's just because we're densely populated, and it's easy to say, oh, hey, I'm from Oakland, where I sit in free food lines. Like, that is, it was a thing because of the time of the time I was born, the time that I lived in the city of Oakland. And you look at Los Angeles and New York and Chicago and all these areas, but we don't really talk about the food injustices that happen in rural areas. And there's an infrastructure issue with rural areas, right? And in the Appalachia specifically, climate is a beast to deal with on top of location. So you get into how the harsh winters are very long and very harsh. The growing seasons of fruits and vegetables are so short. Hunting season is what it is, and so on and so forth. And food preservation is something that you see very prevalent in those types of areas, in the rural areas, because you only have a short window of opportunity with these fruits and vegetables. And that is also why I talk a lot about the freshest best mindset and model really being harmful to lots of communities. It is because food preservation techniques like water bath canning, pressure canning, dehydrating, and pickling all preserve foods at their peak. We have to remember that the whole concept of food preservation was in direct relation to the season of the foods that they were grown, and as far as the meat, when you hunted and processed the meat immediately. So we're not picking up leftovers or anything that is almost, you know, wilted and on its way out. We're preserving food at its peak, at its freshest. So when we had these campaigns that came through, what it did was it caused this psychological damage to the people who were in areas that really could not, do anything other than survive off of preserved foods. That is even true today when we start to talk about the shopping in the aisles versus the outer perimeter of the stores. The aisles are safe. What we need to establish is an understanding of balance, number one, in our diets, but number two, not demonizing preserved foods, because there's a reason why there are people who are unhoused in this climate that are living and surviving on the food that's inside of the aisles because they don't have adequate refrigeration. They don't have the ability to cook food. Imagine a person who can get a can of meat, a can of potatoes, and a can of vegetables and have an entire meal. And they can do that because now a lot of manufacturers are making the pop lids for said foods as well, so that it becomes easily accessible and they don't have to rely on the can opener. And when you're dealing with different degrees of unhoused folks, then you have some who are cooking outdoors, some who don't have access to cook outdoors. But if they can get a can of each thing for $5, depending on where you go, because, you know, if you go to the big box retailer, some of them are a little bit more, you know, efficient than others. You can feed yourself. And so this journey that Chef Elisa takes does touch on, you know, how specifically some of the regions that she visit actually adjusted their food based on what was happening at the time, the climate, the political climate, the actual environment, and so on. So going to Italy, Jamaica and Peru was really kind of a little bit of a twist, in my opinion. Those locations were very interesting choices, and only because she's a Black woman. And let's be clear, like, all of these other people can do these shows, right? And they can go to these places and highlight cuisines and yet not be boxed in by their nationality, ethnicity, or anything like that. And yet when it comes to Black people, we go, oh. And I admit, y'all, I was one of those that was like, oh, what does Italy, Jamaica, and Peru have to do with soul food? And Chef Elisa shows us. She shows us that the stories of the people, where they came from, the oppression that they faced in their respective areas, the effects of colonization, specifically in Jamaica and Peru, how that affected the food, how that affected the people. And there was just this really beautiful thread throughout it all, that she was just looking at every angle of the story of the people. And that is what I really truly loved about this series, because as someone who has traveled quite a bit, I have embraced other cuisines. I do enjoy a variety of things. And to know that there's heart and soul in the people of the hands that prepared it, it is a gentle reminder that we shouldn't be racing to the bottom for the oppression Olympics, to be perfectly honest. Like, we can have our views on what is the worst atrocities done on the face of the planet, but at the end of the day, to have that quote unquote, and I'm using air quotes right now, the high honor of being the one who won the oppression Olympics is just really an asinine mindset. I think that the biggest thing to understand in this is that the world is crazy. It's very nuanced. We have so many different things happening all at one time, and at any given time there is a conflict, and we're seeing that right now all around the globe. There's wars, there are people fighting and killing folk everywhere right now, and the end result of all of this carnage is not just the loss of life that is happening right now, but it's what is going to happen to further generations. When you start bombing land, what happens to the land, people? What happens to the land? You know, this is it's unprecedented what we're seeing around the world. And I'm not naming specific places because Google is free and we know that there's stuff happening everywhere. So we don't have to name names, because I'm not in the oppression Olympics, you know, not going to do that. But what I really, really want to hold true is that, as a true Californian that she is, Elisa brings that LA energy, her style, her vibe, her look. She is comfortable on camera. She is herself. And this is the reason why I love her show so much, is because she is herself. She brings her whole self, her whole LA self to the table. And you get to hear her laugh. You see her smile. You see her honor and revere and respect the people that she engages with. And I think that's really important as well, because, you know, Black women were often painted in a certain light in public, and we know that we are dynamic creatures, and media doesn't always capture that, right? We become this caricature of sorts. And I love the way I feel like she brought her whole authentic self. There was no code switching, but there also wasn't this overly, this need to be this over the top character. I felt like, you know, Chef Elisa was herself the entire time, and that made her show fun, you know, just really fun, really just engaging. You learn some history, you learn some things. I would hope that if you watch it, that you would take a pen and paper and like write down the names of some of these places that she goes to, and take some ideas from the cuisine that she's sampling and eating, and start to just, and, you know, ask yourself, you know, if you're a chef in particular, if you're someone in the food industry, like, really start to look at these ingredients that, you know, the folks are using all around the world and have fun and play with it. I think that's what I took away the most, especially from the Peru episode, is like, just have fun with the food. Like, do something that makes probably absolute no sense to someone else, but you find that way, that twist in there, because who would have thought sushi in Peru? Come on. I really did not see that coming. So we have to understand that, you know, folks, immigration and colonization and all these other things happened where people were like moved all around the globe. Folks made a choice to go to one place because they were fleeing oppression in another. And then out of this came some beautiful magic, some wonderful things. So you can find Searching for Soul Food on Hulu. And I think there are about 8 episodes. It did drop this summer, so definitely check it out. And some fun facts about the series is that I believe it was led by a Black director as well, Black female director. And there was just this solidarity in coming together with this project. There are a lot of hoops to jump through to get this programming. And I really want to highlight the fact that it is not easy. It's expensive, it's time consuming, and we always have to convince those who hold the key that our stories are worth being told because people want to hear them. And that not just our stories, in the case of Alisa, her presence for the stories of the other people, because her show, even though titled Searching for Soul Food, is about the common thread between different communities. And that is something that is needed as well, and something that, you know, should be highlighted and commanded by a Black woman in media and in food. So let's give her the opportunity to shine by watching and enjoying and telling our friends and family that they should watch it as well. It's good binge worthy TV, and it should, you know, kind of make you feel some type of way and want to go to the grocery store afterwards and go shopping and grab some stuff. So yes, again, Searching for Soul Food on Hulu with the West Coast chef extraordinaire, Alisa Reynolds. So that's about all we have for today. I just wanted to tap in with you about this show and make sure that you support Black media and food. And until next time, y'all, be good, okay? I'll talk to you later. Bye.